All right, folks, welcome back to the flagstick.com T-Talk podcast. Stefan Tiedorf here at home with my co-host, Scott McLeod. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Live was our plan, but that didn't quite work out, did it?
I was 6 feet away from stepping into your into the cave, into a great studio setup, excited when I got a message that close contact with a friend. So no symptoms, but just due to Scott's old age, I didn't want to potentially give him COVID and that be the end of him. You know, I didn't want to be responsible
for Merry that. Christmas to me. Thank you. That's your gift to me. So I appreciate that. That's for sure. And, you know, certainly we can't be too safe. And we'd love to have done this in person. That was our plan for sure. But you know what? We'll get our year interview in otherwise. And yeah, we're back to good old Zoom.
Yeah. I mean, now it's been like 3 weeks since like we've had a lesson. Right. Like the last time you had a close contact. Now I got a close contact. Moral of the story, don't come to Kingston. It's a hotbed. It's basically Wuhan right now. Like it's like terrible. It's patient zero for the Omicron or whatever it's called. But hey, you're here because you don't want to talk about COVID. You want to talk about the year in review, all of our episodes, the whole year. It was a crazy year. It was a turning year in a lot of ways. That I was thinking about it today when I said to you, like, yeah, I'll come over, we'll do it at your place. That would have been the first podcast we recorded beside each other in the same room since March of 2020. We've been doing it from home since, which it's fine. It works great. We figured out our cadence and like our guests have obviously worked out that way, but like it would have been different just to be in person.
Yeah.
And I look back at all this list and it's like, every memory I have of this is just me sitting in this chair in my basement.
Sadly, that's been the way. And we've definitely got used to it. And, you know, getting out there is different for sure. And I look forward to doing some live stuff again. Definitely. It's become the new normal, but obviously we've adjusted and we've managed to bring on a lot of guests over the year in 48 shows, 49, including this one. Again, hard to believe, but I went back and started looking at the list. And first off, it was like, I got to remember all these shows. Like it's seriously, I mean, trying to remember back to January is pretty hard. And I think that's just the way things are these days, life just flying along.
Yeah. So if we just look back, that's 49 episodes. This will be our last for the years. We take a little bit of break. There's nothing on. We're not breaking down the QB shootout or Greg Norman's comments, as little as he was allowed to say this week. But yeah, just looking back, like I think back, you know, I got a memory for a lot of them, like thinking back to Jerry D, who I don't know was a big fan of mine when I was making jokes on the podcast. I think he was probably felt like he should have been making the jokes all the way to Noah Steele, who came on a couple times this year, you know, everything in between. What for you, which ones stand out? If you're just going through this list of names, you know, what memories do you have now going back through all these?
There's a lot. I mean, like you said, having Jerry on was fun. You know, it's good interacting with him, but you know, it's obvious, you know, if you're the comedian, you let the comedian tell the jokes for sure. But it's neat to see, you know, those people that work in different industries and have a celebrity at a certain level, but how much they're just golfers in the end. But, you know, even just after that, you know, and I don't want to run through every single one, but, you know, sitting and chatting with Jacqueline Lee, which was an interview that I did, but just the getting to know her better. And she's that, you know, unfortunately she missed the cut at the LPGA Q series. But I think when I look back through the year, Christine Fraser, having that discussion with her, she was just on Golf Channel the other day. People are getting to know her.
See my tweet about that? Like how insecure is Tiger? Yeah. Like Christine gets an interview on the Golf Channel and Tiger gets so insecure. He has to announce that he's playing in the shootout with Charlie. Like that's, you know, some people like you think after 15 majors, you'd have a little self-confidence, but couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Taking Christine's fire
spotlight. Yeah. It was terrible timing for sure. You know what? I think, a couple of the shows that actually wasn't here, I enjoyed just because I was away. And then obviously you had a couple of guest co-hosts in Ryan French and then the other show with Mark Baldwin. and Willie Wilcox. And it was interesting just to sit back and to listen to those while I was away, and just their interaction. And you know, I can't say enough about those guys and, you know, their contributions, their stories, hearing what they've done. And obviously Willie's got his own podcast now, and Mark is brilliant. And, you know, Ryan's become such a good friend. So it was great to have them involved again this year as well.
Yeah, that's kind of where I see a lot of these is memories of people that, you know, became friends or people that like were really passionate. I think that's the difference. Mm. When I look at some of these interviews, you know, not the most, some people, you know, come on and though they're passionate, they don't know how to show that in this form. But then you think of someone like Ryan Robillard, who comes on here and like so passionate about teaching, right? Yeah. And what he does. And then you go down to Barry from Copetown Woods.
Right? Who I ran into on Tuesday, actually, believe it or not.
Another guy like so passionate where like, I think if I the biggest thing I wish we had with Barry is I need to get back on in the spring is like, I wish I had him on the spring where like that him coming on made me want to play golf again. Cause it like reiterated the fun of what a golf course should be. Right. I look at Marty Jurtson who like
brilliant
and you know, just a brilliant guy that I met at one point, but you know, nothing that he remembers. I always remember our conversations like Ryan, another one, reconnecting with Andrew Shruden, who I haven't seen in a few years. And then, you know, anytime Kyle comes on, like you go through this whole
list. Well, look at Kyle coming on and, you know, the PGA championship and a guy that, you know, played high school golf on Kiwa Island at Cacique and from Charleston. He was able to give us an insight that, you know, nobody else could just because he had that experience as the caddy and being out there. And I think the biggest thing with the podcast format that's different than just kind of a, you know, a one-off meeting or something, you just get a deeper story. And, you know, I've been tweeting a little bit about, you know, Christine's interview. Her interview on Golf Channel was only 5 minutes, but she spent a half an hour with us and people were yearning for more after she was on the Golf Channel. So it was really, you know, nice to be able to say, here's a half an hour conversation with her if you want to know more. And getting to know people a little bit better has been great. Jeff Bishop, the interview you did with him from Dormy Workshop, you know, really talking about the business of the game and a lot of the different things of how they grew their brand. And I think that was a neat perspective over what you might find on a, we'll call it the usual golf podcast. Mm-hmm. It gave a different texture to their story, not only as a golfer, but a business, a Canadian business that's gone worldwide, something that's really specialized. And I think there's a unique flavor there that appealed to some different people. And I think that grew the audience a little bit too, because people realized, you know, we're taking on different aspects of the golf topic.
I think, just to wrap it up, now that these irons are being launched, you know, when you had Chris on here from Mizuno, now those irons are out there. You can go see them now. You can go hit them. You can go test them now. Everything he talked about after listening to it. We can go through each of them. We almost did at this point. They're all fun. So I would love to hear other people's favorites. I know Brad Lawrence has a favorite. It's his own. He listens to it every day before he goes to bed. And when he wakes up in the morning. So a lot of great ones. I think looking back, the most fun and chaotic one was definitely the 100th episode.
Oh, by far.
That one was fun. I kind of want to do something like that again, where we just book 100, like a ton of people, and see if we can get through them all and give them a 2-minute spot and see what happens. But another great year. I can't believe it's been, you know, we're coming up on year 3 of the podcast coming up soon here. And like, you know, every single week you and I just sit down and chat about golf and I don't even look at the numbers anymore.
No, right? Not
and really. I think we're roughly around 1,000 listens a week, which is awesome to see. And we're in all sorts of countries and over 100,000 downloads overall, which is a great, if you told me that 2 years ago, A, I would be shocked we're still doing it. B, like, I would be shocked that a pandemic kept us doing it too. Like there's so many things that now we're
well, hearing. I'll tell you something funny. I was at a PGA awards ceremony on Monday night, and you know, you never know who's listening and what your demographic is. I mean, everybody always thinks of podcasts being a certain part of the market. And I just happened to be talking to a 2-time award winner for The Zone this year, the retailer of the year. And this is the PGA of Ottawa here in Canada. Danielle Nadon, who's, you know, in her 60s, longtime professional. And she made a point to tell me she just came back from her place in Turks and Caicos, and she'd been down there for a month. And she said she almost was apologetic and said, the season's been so busy, I haven't had a chance to catch the podcast. And my first thing was like, oh, wow, good that you're a listener or whatever. Yeah. And she said, I listened to 30 of them to catch up while wow. I was on the beach. Like, she was reading, lying on the beach, listening to the podcast in Turks and Caicos. I wonder
if her thoughts come out of one of our voices now in her head after
I don't know, but in, like, yeah, but the thing that she said to me too, though, was that it introduced her to a whole bunch of people in the golf community that she didn't even realize or know or understand. And that made it intriguing for her. So, you know, and I said to her, that's what makes it intriguing for us as well, is getting to know some of these people better. And, you know, sometimes we know them, we know their story, but sometimes we just reach out and, you know, it turns into something we didn't never even expected.
Yeah. You never know who'll answer, right? Like, if I look at when I chatted with Chase Koepka, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just shot him a DM and he was like, I'd love to come on. Now he's a professional caddy.
Exactly. And the funny part is, I mean, I think we mentioned on the podcast, but, you know, during that call with him, like, you know, he was in a house with Brooks and Brooks is like walking by in the background.
Eat pizza. Having a good time. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, lots of great moments there. And like you said, yeah, I can't get past that 100th one where we had, I don't know, 12 guests, I guess it was. And it was just chaos is what it was. But a fun chaos.
Fun chaos. That is right. Why don't we get into some like favorite stories of the year, our most memorable stories of golf that wasn't necessarily talked about on the podcast, but just overall. Now we're reflecting on 2021 and not the 2020-2021 season. That was too long. We're just talking about the 2021 year. So anything that started January up until now, we'll start it off this way. Like, what was your most memorable non-major tournament this year?
Ooh. You know what, this was tough to kind of think about because, again, so many events go by and, you know, each week we're focused on what happens, but then you almost forget as what happens. So even when I started to look back at the list, I was forgetting certain winners and different tournaments, but I can remember particularly during the Players, and it is not a major, but it could be at some point, you never know, but currently is not. I was really paying attention to that because Justin Thomas, you know, was well back with two rounds to go. And, you know, a friend, John Graham, who works with him on putting, was, you know, pretty nervous. They had just started doing a bunch of stuff, came down to the final round, and JT had a three putt, I think, on the eighth hole. And I can tell you that a certain coach might have grabbed a few extra tasty beverages and headed to the driving range because he couldn't even watch while he was there. And he managed to close it out. And, you know, so that was a cool one to see. And I mean, that was a record score, 132, as far as the weekend. I think he tied Fred Couples and Rocco Mediate as far as the weekend. So that was a big event.
Chaotic Sunday. Bryson,
it was
Bryson topped one.
Yes,
remember that?
Exactly. Yeah, Lee
Westwood was hitting banana slices like a
right. Yeah, because Westwood handicap. Was on that run for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, he was like turning back the clock for a couple weeks to, let's call a spade are relevant.
Yes.
At the end of the year.
Yeah.
Right. Like he played in the Ryder Cup and he did what he did in the Ryder Cup. And it was probably the last run we see of him and Ian Poulter at a Ryder Cup, unless one of those two do exactly what they did this year. But like, yeah, like turning back the clock that everyone was rooting for Westy for like a good month where he was just the best player in the world, basically.
Yeah.
Never didn't win, but like was the best player in the world for that little stretch.
Yeah.
And yeah, Justin Thomas, basically no one was really talking about him coming into Sunday and a couple chokes and a couple tops. And here we go.
Yeah. It was definitely a little bit chaotic, and that's a 1A for me. I have a 1B as well. So I sort of cheated, even though it was most memorable. There was a second one there. You know, you mentioned his name and, you know, certainly he's a friend of the show and a personal friend, watching young Noah Steele win as an amateur on the McKenzie Tour, you know, in the fashion that he did, going super low. And I just happened to be in, you know, PEI at the time. And, you know, I was walking into light poles trying to watch it on my phone. And so that event for me was, you know, was memorable as well, but, you know, probably more on a personal note. But I also think for, you know, for a country, those are great indications of the quality of, you know, players that are coming along in this country. So I don't think it's just about him. It's about the fact that we have so many great players coming along. And you know what? He finished first over Etienne Papineau, who is an amateur, who was right in the mix there as well. And in the end, it was Jesse Smith who got the number one check, even though he finished third, and he was quite happy. And I think he owed a bottle of wine to Noah after that.
Yeah, one. I think so. I think you undersell the relationship you two have, and the right. And I think Noah would talk you up too in the fact, like, the amount of work you put in with this kid. I'm not going to call him a kid. He's a man now. Yeah. It could lift both of us above his shoulders. So I think you need to give yourself a lot of credit with, you know, what you and Derek and all the crew do with Noah. And, you know, he wouldn't be there without all you guys. I don't think he'd be there without me as his old boss from Golf Town. I'll take some credit somewhere along.
Clearly. Yeah.
I mean, maybe I was so bad that he was like, I got to figure out how to play golf, 'cause I can't work for a living. But yeah, I think you're not giving yourself enough credit. That was an awesome win. I thought of you when that happened. I'm sure you had to take a seat for a second,
because,
you know, 2 years ago, I remember asking you, like, does he have it like to do it? Because everyone thinks they have it, right? Right. We've had multiple people come through. I've walked with some of the best players in the world, right? You have as well. And I remember saying to you a few years ago, does he have it? And he said, you know, like a top 10 in one of his first ever starts in an actual full field McKenzie Tour event, I believe back in 2019, prior to the coronavirus, right? Like he's in there. Like he can make it happen. And now we're seeing that happen, winning on the McKenzie Tour. I know it's not the McKenzie Tour everyone is like knows it is, with all the top tier talent, whatever. Still some really, really, really high end talent out there that he was able to beat. And I've walked, as I mentioned, walked the fairways with the best in the world, and Noah's game is right there with them. I really truly believe this kid's got what it takes, and the work ethic on top of it is, you know, bar none, something I don't have. There's a reason
not many do really. And I mean, that's what separates him and players like Blair Bursey, who was on the show as well. And, you know, obviously that's why, you know, he's had success this year. But
without the work ethic of good coaches, you don't have the great results of a player. So shout out to you, and shout out to Derek, and shout out to Derek especially for just picking up, I believe, his second Teacher of the Year award, if I'm not mistaken.
He won Junior Leader of the Year last year, and then Teacher of the Year this year, and then he'll be up for the obviously the National Teacher of the Year as far as voting right now. So yeah,
pretty good.
Good team.
Pretty good. Hey, pretty good. I got a couple that stood out to me just from like an entertainment standpoint. The Genesis was awesome. Watching Max win it. Max, I don't know Max. I've never met Max. Everyone likes Max, though. No one's saying a bad thing about the guy. And just to see him battle that playoff, like thinking about Tony Finau in the mix. You got two stories. You got the local kid battling at like what is his Masters, his biggest tournament. Like, I'm sure if you said you get to win the Genesis or a green jacket, he might actually choose the Genesis. That's how much this tournament meant to him. Tony still hadn't broken through for that extra win yet. The playoff, the backwards shot that he made, that up and down, that all of that chaos. And then like the BMW was kind of in that same vein where you got Bryson DeChambeau, who's just hitting it so far and like changed the game over the last couple of years, yada, yada, yada. And those are in quotations versus Patrick Cantlay, who just hits it straight and hits it on a dime. It was hitting darts and just battling it out. Those two just really stand out to me. But then if we're talking on a personal note, you know, having Andrew Shuden on here when him and Ken Davis won the Rocket Mortgage, that was really cool. I didn't watch any of the Rocket Mortgage. They get into contention. I throw it on. There's him jumping in the air like he's in his 20s again, right? Like this, like it was just cool to watch. It's just way cooler to see your friends do those cool things.
Yeah,
it's special.
Yeah, and Cam too. I mean, that's a guy obviously was on the show, you know, the year prior. Not a guy who's done a lot of podcast interviews or been a lot of guests, but you know, we got to him early on, and to see him win, I guess that, you know, it just provides a little bit extra connection for sure.
100%. Let's go the other way. Who had the most disappointing year this year for you?
You know, if you ask me, I would say, you know, Ricky Fowler is my guy. He'd probably say no, because obviously he became a father, got married, all that deal or whatever. But, you know, this is a guy who had high expectations. Now he's dropped. He dropped as low as 128th in the world this year, which is a guy who was continually in the top 10 for a long, long time. Lately, he's definitely showed some form, but, you know, that's the lowest he'd been in the world rankings since early 2010. So that's pretty significant for him. And I think the fact that, you know, once you sort of fall out of that top 50, when you're not going to get access to, you know, the WGCs, all the majors automatically, those are all the things that are really important for you to keep your ranking up there. And they sort of open up a lot of doors, and it's kind of like a plus handicap. Once a person gets to a plus handicap, it's really hard sometimes to, you know, for that to go away. So it's the same on the PGA Tour. You get in the top 50, it's really hard to bump out of that top 50. You have to play significantly, you know, poor. And obviously Ricky did that. So I'm expecting a, you know, kind of a big dad bump for him, you know, going into head to next year. And, you know, we've seen that play of late, but I have to say, you know, of all the players, he's the guy I sort of said, wow, where did he go?
Yeah. It seems like it's that, I feel like we need to find some data on this, where there's that years of like 20, I have this just a theory, like that year of like 28 to 32, where people kind of have these other things that go on, and it might be a dip, but is it a dip from focus? Is it a dip? Like, I don't think it's a dip from talent. Like, I don't know. It's just a theory. And I wonder if he's in that, and obviously other things are going on. Who knows what else, right? Like, he had a kid this year, you know, that doesn't just happen, you know, with a snap of a fingers, right? Like, no? it could be difficult for a lot of people, which adds a ton of different stress on people. And, you know, so I think it's a good call on the big dad bump in 2021. I like that. For me, it's if you look on paper, this person had a great year. But if you look beyond that, I think it's a year that I was really hoping for a step forward on everything outside of golf. And it's Bryson DeChambeau. He's a guy that I was like, what is he turning 27 now? If somewhere in that range, you know, I was hoping for a maturity jump from this guy. and I did not see it. He's 28 years old. He's still doing the kind of woe is me talk. It started the year with, you know, not needing the vaccine because, you know, he's healthy, which is like, I thought you're the science guy, right? Like, it's like these little things. Then like, woe is me. Brooks is bullying me. The real story comes out of how it all happened and how he handled it, right? And then like, you go through the whole year of just making it me. And like, I feel like he thinks everything he's doing is the right thing, and he's not willing to listen. And the people he has surrounding him are all people that are yes men.
Yes.
And I heard a great quote. I was listening to the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia podcast prior to just coming over to your place. And they were talking about the writing room, and the one guy made a joke, and the whole room is laughing, except the one person's not laughing. And he turns to the lady that wasn't laughing, and she's like, was it not funny? She said to him, I wonder what it's like to pay a bunch of people to laugh at everything you say. And that's what I think Bryson DeChambeau does, is that he has these people around him that are like, that TikTok you did, you need to post that. No, everyone will love that. That comment, like, everyone's saying the right things. And I think his caddy was done doing that. I think other people are done doing that. I have no speculation here. I feel like Cobra's almost at the point where they're like, I think we're done with you soon. Like, I'm just speculating that, like, unless this guy really grows up, it's like, now he's quitting golf. Well, did you see this recently? It's like he was going to quit golf earlier this year because of all the noise.
I saw that headline. I didn't read the story though, because it just didn't give any merit to it.
All woe is me. And at some point in your life, you need to realize that no one cares. No one cares about you that much. It's like, time to move on. If you want to be a golfer, focus on golf. If you want to be a WWE entertainer and go down that road, but like, the fake smiles of your teammates at the Ryder Cup is all I had to say. And that unless you do some changing, the people around you aren't going to change.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And you're right. There's always a lot of people that will, they'll say what you need them to say because they're not going to go against you because they're afraid to be kind of out of the circle more than anything. And,
that's
sometimes
good in that circle.
Yeah, life is good in that circle, and people fear not being in that circle. So mm-hmm. sometimes it's hard to tell somebody to grow up or do something that maybe they don't want to do. And you're right. I think in that sense, definitely, on the golf course, could he have done more? Yeah, probably. I mean, he did a lot. But, if you're going to be a genuine superstar of the game, and maybe he doesn't care. I mean, it doesn't appear that way. It appears that he really cares and he wants to be liked by everyone. But if that's the case, then yeah, you got to show a certain level of maturity beyond, you're not 18, you're not 19, you're not 21. As you said, you're 27. It's time to
28.
28. So time to step
up.
Not
really that big of a difference, but it's like,
yeah, enough.
You're not freshly out of school anymore. Time to start acting like
If you're a smart guy, be smart. Show us you're smart.
Yep. That's the problem. He wanted to show us that he was smart for so long that the more and more he tried, it proved you're not. And it's okay to not be the smartest person in the room. It's actually the best thing to do is not be the smartest person.
100%.
Let's go into the most shocking year for you. If you look at the whole year, looking back, what was a shock?
I think some of the, we'll call it the older play. Some of the players, and I've always said, the golf ball doesn't know how old you are, but, all of a sudden early on in the season on the PGA Tour, seeing a guy like Stewart Cink, we're talking about him all of a sudden, he's leading the FedEx Cup and whatever. And, it sort of goes against what everybody expected. Once Tiger was sort of out of the way, everybody was young guys, young guys, young guys, young guys. And that wasn't the case. I mean, and you'll get to yours. And that was a guy I thought about too, but guys like Stewart Cink just jumping in there, kind of finding, we'll call it the fountain of youth, using technology to kind of change things in their game, maybe inspired a little bit more, having his son on the bag a little bit, doing some different things. Just finding a different gear at an age where you'd think, this guy's got to be pretty comfortable. But clearly he's a competitor and wanted to still compete and showed that he could.
It's still shocking to me. He's only 48. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's been 48 for a while. He might be.
He felt like he was 48 when he was at Royal Montreal and I was falling around at the President's Cup, which is now is like, 14 years ago, right?
It's insane. Yeah, like in 2021, like he started off 2021 not the greatest, right? So he came off 2020 with a nice win starting at T4. He basically misses, three of the first six cuts to start. Then he picks off a win, and it's just kind of consistently in that T30 range. He missed two cuts. He was the leader at the Open Championship after day one, and then proceeded to go 11 shots worse against the cut. But like, that can happen at the Open Championship real quick.
Clearly, wrong side of the draw, wrong weather. Bye bye.
I think it's great. And for me, like, if I think I would get roasted if I didn't pick Phil because I said, and I quote, this guy is a mascot for the PGA Tour. And then that week he won the PGA Championship. But if you actually look at the year, it's absolutely shocking. I had another podcast where I'm trying to load the PGA Tour website and it just doesn't work.
Oh, so there's something funky with it. I looked at it last night. I don't know if they were trying to change something over, but all of a sudden there was some weird font and it wouldn't spit up. And
so I can pull up Stewart Cink's results, but I can't pull up Phil's. Okay, now it's working. This is a joke. So if you look at it, if you told me that, hey, Phil Mickelson's going to have a year where he played in 23 events. He missed 14 cuts.
Yeah, I was going to say, put your hand over the PGA Championship.
Yeah, and look if you at put your hand over that first, right? And he had four top 25s. You'd be like, yeah, this is a guy that's on the back half. And I'd be like, oh, he won a bunch on the
Champions Tour. Like, yeah, of course.
No one can compete with him out there. He's the Tiger Woods of the Champions Tour, right? Everybody's like, yeah, that makes sense. And then you throw a PGA Championship in there, you're like, what? No, like that does not make
at Kiawah of all things at the Ocean Course.
Yeah, after that he had one tournament where he finished inside the top 70, right? Yeah. Like, or sorry, the top 60. Like, it's just, it's a shock. It's just an absolute shock. The problem, I saw a great tweet. It might've been No Laying Up that said this, where it's like, the problem with PGA, with Phil winning the PGA Championship is it was like one of the best majors of all time. Like, so much fun, so awesome, but it delayed him going into the broadcast booth, which we believe is probably just going to be as awesome. And I think it's true. Like, I don't see him going in next year. He's probably going to play another, you know, he'll still play every major. I would assume Phil plays a full 20, 20 event season next year on the
PGA. And I think even if the thoughts or the hope that he goes in the broadcast booth, short of, you know, an appearance on like something like the Match, I don't think he's a guy who's going to be full time if ever to do that. If he gets asked to do it, he might show up for a few events, but I don't see him turning into Nick Faldo and, you know, hanging out in the booth every single week. I just don't see it.
Yeah. I don't think he's built for it either. Like, I think it's easy to do what Nick Faldo does every single week. It is difficult to do what Phil does every single week and be the guy that needs to go out there and be entertaining. Right? Like, it's only built for a certain amount of people, and those people do run dry, right? Like, you know, not everybody can be Johnny Carson. Not everybody.
No, you're going to have the same jokes. You're going to have the same takes. Your shtick is going to run out, is really what it does.
Yeah. Like, look at Tony Romo, for example, on the NFL. I love Tony Romo. I think what he does is awesome. It's different. You know, he comes on, he tries to call plays. He looks at the defense. He's like, hey, if I'm the quarterback, I'm running this right now. People loved it when it first came out. People hate it now.
Yeah.
Right. I still love it. Right. Or like, if we look at, you know, the same vein, like the Manning cast that they're doing on the NFL right now, where the Manning's literally.
Yeah. At some point it's going to expire.
It's going to expire. Exactly. And but what doesn't expire is that usual nonsense that's been around forever, because it just allows you to watch the game with some color commentary. Right. And that's why
it's not the show. It's an accent, right?
Exactly. Without golf equipment, you don't get to play golf. What cool golf equipment kind of got you intrigued this year, Scotty?
Yeah, you know what? I'm always digging deep and looking at that stuff. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of the same stuff we see over and over. And, you know, there's incremental gains. And, you know, I even talked to some manufacturers. I was up at a manufacturer the other day and talking to them, and it was kind of 1-2% a year gains. That's what we're trying to go after. And I spent some time with a VP of marketing for another manufacturer last week, and it's sort of the same thing. And it's hard to find a lot of, you know, deep innovation that really kind of gets your attention. Things that I saw this year, you know, Cobra progressed as far as using 3D printing. Like, every manufacturer is using 3D printing in some way, but they actually brought it into the mainstream as an integrated part of their putters. They also did it with some of their decals and things that are on their irons as well. But, you know, it's something that's intriguing, the fact that it's obviously become much more common. You know, you can get a 3D printer at home and make things if you want, but it's certainly going to be more prominent as we head into the future. I mean, manufacturers are going to use it more for components and parts of different things. The home launch monitor segment definitely got my attention. You know, obviously Foresight diving in with the GC3, you know, Bushnell with their Launch Pro. We're seeing some other smaller ones come along. You know, Full Swing has their kit. That's going to progress. And that was something that we, you know, always predicted, and we talked about it for the last few years. And, you know, in the fact that at some point, you know, there's going to be something available at a very low price that people can use at home. And it's not even a question about buying it. I mean,
it's like accessibility, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah. I mean, right now, I mean, if you look at iron prices of, you know, a top brand irons are, you know, $1,600 to $1,800 Canadian. Well, if all of a sudden you can buy, you know, kind of a launch monitor that you can get in that range and use at home all the time. And obviously it's going to cost you for your setup and stuff like that. We're just going to see that more and more, especially in, you know, countries like ours in Canada or the northern part of the US or other countries where, you know, 6 months a year or 5 months a year, you can't go out and play on grass. And, you know, at the high end of that, we're actually seeing even golf courses like there's one called the RJK Club in Iceland that has actually got 16 TrackMan simulators now at their course. To the point, if you think about that, for the capacity that they have, you know, if they added just even a few more, they could end up almost having the same capacity as their golf course, but on the other end of the season. So I think we're going to see that, you know, come along more. And the last thing would be a lot of the eco trends that we're seeing in a lot of the clothing and footwear. We're starting to see a lot more friendly materials being used, less use of polyurethanes, plastics, different types of things, things that are using recycled materials. We're definitely seeing a lot more of that. And that's a trend I think will definitely continue as, you know, companies like, you know, Adidas, for an example, trying to reduce their use of materials that cannot be recycled.
Yeah, I think the idea of like, why does an iron head need to be wrapped in that little piece of plastic? Mm-hmm. Can you just wrap it in paper when you like, right, you're going to pull it off immediately?
Yeah.
Things along those lines. These like, yeah, I think it's a good thing to think about for sure. I love the 3D printing. I actually had that as my original and then you stole it. So I'll let you have that. The home launch monitor stuff really interests me. I think it's going to be like, I look at the original brands, the ones that you see on the tour, the Trackmans, the four quads, right? Where now this is happening. This is a telling time for those brands where now they have to look at themselves and go, do we keep investing in our product and assume people are going to be paying the prices they're used to being paid, right? Like, what's a Trackman, $25,000, right? Like, yeah, US, right? Like, are we going to keep, you know, doubling down, tripling down, or do we have to accept that we have to find a way to do this at a lower cost or a lower,
Lower entry point. And I think what you're seeing is that, you know, and that's what, you know, Foresight did, for an example, and going from the GC Quad to the GC3, it's just more limited. You know, it's a lower price point. You know, they're part of Bushnell now, and they obviously did the Launch Pro hardware the same, and they did it at a 3,000 US entry point versus 7,000 for the GC3, but put in like a $700, $800 subscription fee so people can pay less upfront. So they're just restricted a little bit more. So Amiibo Plus, for an example, which is, you know, 2000 US, but people can still use it for a simulator. Yes, it has, maybe it's a little bit more limited. You can pay for some upgrades for some more parameters, but I think that's where it becomes sort of the, you know, the a la carte sort of process that, you know, at the top end, obviously somebody that's coaching wants all the tools that something like a Trackman 4 provides, but, you know, the home consumer who's just trying to hit golf balls and kind of wants the basic information. Yeah. There's a different market for that too. Just as much as there's a different market for golf equipment. Not everybody wants to pay $1,800 for a set of irons. So that leads to maybe some of the topics or areas that you're going to talk
about. Yeah. I mean, that's just what's been on my mind lately is like, is those direct to consumer brands and the way that brands are thinking about it a little bit more, right? Like sub 70, you know, Haywood, there's a lot of great putter brands out there, like Kingston Putters. Don't think they're in Kingston where we are, but like just a nice high end brands where you don't need to pay the prices that people are used to get a great quality piece of equipment. Yeah. Right. And I see more of this happening. And I wonder, and I'm more in the commerce brain right now, right, if you're going to see less big box, you know, clubs at Golf Town, clubs at, you know, PGA Superstore, and these brands being like, hey, we don't need to do this anymore. We can provide a better experience with our tech reps and all these different ways to get them. Like, I'm sure that'll always be there, but like, if we can do direct to consumer, right, there's a higher percentage we are making per sale. We don't have a middleman going through selling it. And we can actually invest more in quality and do it that way.
Well, they also don't have
kind of where my brain's going.
They also don't have to be in the situation. You know, obviously you worked in golf retail and, you know, I did as well. You got to consider the fact that once you put your inventory out there, whether you're going to get paid, hopefully eventually. But the thing is, there's still a timeline that goes with that. So if you're all of a sudden sending your product out and you're giving a company 90 days to pay because it's this big box store, so it has a certain buying power that you're going to lend them, you know, terms that are a little bit more extended than maybe you would. Why would you do that when all of a sudden, you know, the consumer that is going to pay right away and get your product? So you're right. I mean, there's a lot, it's a lot different channel. You don't have to rely necessarily on that big box store to do your marketing and branding. Well, they have a certain amount of power. I think what's happening is these brands are determining that they are niche and they don't need the golf stores to limit what they do. They need to control what they're doing more than anything.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's go two more little quickly on our favorite courses and round of the year. And they don't necessarily need to be the same.
No.
What was your favorite course you played this year, Scotty?
Well, I had to think back on that. And I think, you know, there was a number of fun golf courses that I got to play, a few new courses that I got to play this year. Had a terrible day for this as far as weather-wise, but I played Devil's Pulpit in the fall, late summer, actually. A little bit rainy, but really enjoyed that, despite the fact that, you know, there was, I think, 2 inches of rain that morning, and it was super, super long. You know, outside of the company that I played with some good people, but the course itself.
I thought you were going to say the company was bad.
No. Outside of
the
all.
Company I had to play with.
Yeah, actually, a future guest, Kevin Blue, who from Golf Canada, who will be on. I played with him. Of course, he forced me to play from the back tees, but which is perfectly fine. I got to see the whole golf course.
Far enough. Get over it.
Yeah. So I would say Devil's Pulpit, you know, north of Toronto, up in Caledon area. I think I enjoyed that one the most. What about you?
I mean, we talked about it on here, but playing Beacon Hall was a pleasure. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm going to call it a rich man's paradise, person's paradise, where it's like, it's a perfect in shape golf course with great food, great drinks, great conditions, and every hole's fun. Like, it's like, it's still a top 10 course in Canada, if I'm not mistaken.
For sure.
But like, the layout's great. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing amazing on the other side either. It's just all fun. Like every hole I can almost remember, and that's rare for me. Yeah. Right. Like I play courses and I'll play them once and I'll have like, I'll remember like the first or the 18th where I'm not you. You'll remember where the bathrooms are.
Sure.
And this is like, I might not be able to get every single hole, but like in my head, I can get most of them from that course just because it was a fun golf course.
So, that's good. I mean, it's distinctive.
Good people.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, but I wouldn't say it's my favorite round of the year. What about you? What was your favorite round of the year?
This one I had to think back. I had some memorable rounds, good and bad. I mean, starting with a 9 at the PGA Spring Open made the round memorable. Didn't make it necessarily good. I rebounded from that. I would say from a personal standpoint, I was able to go home to Prince Edward Island for the first time in a couple of years. And I managed to be invited to play in the Pro-Am at the PEI Open, which is a Mackenzie Tour, PGA Tour Canada event. And not only did I play with some good friends there, I also played with Blair Bercy, who eventually was on the show as a guest. And you know what? It was just kind of a perfect summer day in PEI with, you know, kind of good people, guys that loved to play the game. Blair was fantastic. Seeing the Canadian Tour get back to Prince Edward Island, which was great as well. And seeing a lot of players even that day, it just made for something that was perfect. And you know what? They did a great job on the Pro-Am too. I mean, you know, you play a lot of events and you're thinking, oh, you know what? So-and-so did a good job with this or did, you know, a good job with that. But these guys went over the top. I mean, they delivered a full pizza to every group out on the golf course on top of everything else. And literally they drove up and said, hey, it was good. It was,
you ordered your toppings on it?
No. But they had options for us or whatever.
Okay.
And I think there was literally 5 breweries or distilleries in probably about 7 holes that were there, and they went over the top. They did a really great job. And again, it was nice to have it back there. What also made it distinctive as well is that the players were having a great time. They were there for 2 weeks. And for me, that was nice because I was getting players that were texting and going, hey, where do I go? Where's the beach? Where do I go to this? We want this. And so that was fun as well. So that was it for me. How about you? Yeah,
if you're having a bad time, I don't want to be around you.
No, you should not. That's for sure. And hey, they're looking forward to having that back there next year. I think it's going to be in June. Once we see the full schedule, we'll see, you're going to be there. You're going next year. Yeah.
I'm playing it. I got my card.
Oh, did you? Guys. Nice.
Yeah.
They have a net division for 22. I didn't know that. That's cool.
No, they heard about all the work that you and I are doing together and they just assumed.
Fair enough.
They're just like, he's going to turn pro.
Yeah. Definitely.
So they just gave me my status on the Mackenzie Tour.
Makes sense.
My favorite round of the year. I mentioned on here, I played with a 96-year-old Got That's paired so up cool. with them at St. Catharines Golf Country Club with my buddy Matt. It was just an awesome day, right? Like, I look at that, you know, we roll up tee. Hey, no, you're playing with Bob. Bob introduces himself on the tee and just drives to his tee. We haven't teed off, so we're already like, what's going on? Bob, like, the starter's yelling at him. He comes back. We hit, then Bob hits, and then we play the hole. And then he introduces himself fully the exact again. Same way again on the green.
That's one of my favorite stories on the podcast.
Matt and I remember being like, it's 51st States. We're doing this every hole. And then from there, no, like, this guy probably is more put together than I am. Like, he was telling stories. He was talking about, you know, how long he'd been a member there, you know.
Should we bring him on the pod?
I think we should. If I find this
guy. And maybe he's got his own.
I don't know if, yeah. But yeah, it was just a cool story. And then, like, I look at the match, like, Matt and I were playing a match that day, and I don't know. Like, I was 2 under through 8. I had an eagle, and I was up 5 on my buddy Matt. After 8 holes, like, and he's complaining that, like, that I'm a sandbagger because, like, I hadn't been playing much at that point either. But then I double bogey 9, I choked it away.
Bob didn't want any of the action or anything, or
no, I don't know. I didn't get into that with Bob yet. I probably couldn't afford to play him.
Probably not.
You know, and then on the back 9, like, Matt came back, like, and I was on 18 down 1 after being up 5 through 8 and ended up winning 18. We tied the match and we had a beer after, and Bob went on his merry way. He made a bomb for a par, like, a 50 footer for a par on like the 17th hole, and he celebrated. It's like, those are just like cool moments. Like, he's my favorite round of golf. And I forget a lot of them over the year, but like, ones that are different where you, like, you meet somebody like that and you just have a good time. And Matt and I don't get to play as much as I wish we could, but
yeah,
easily one of my favorite rounds.
That's cool. I like that. I like that story. I mean, you know, that's a lot about what the game is about. You know, Jason Logan from Score Golf had a column this week talking about playing with strangers. And, you know, that's something he and I have talked about a fair bit. And, you know, I've always advocated that that's always an interesting way to play the game, because, you know, people get in a rut. They play with the same group all the time. They want to play the same twosome, the same threesome. They get irritated when somebody joins their group. But you know what? Here's the thing. You both love golf. That's why you're out there, or you know, so it's, I think, a nice, what happens way to bond.
Is it's the brain is built from a defensive,
yeah, I guess,
way, so. Right? And that, yeah, people remember the bad time. It's like, you play poker.
Of course.
I bet you I could tell me your worst beat right now, and you're gonna boom. All right, I was sitting at this casino.
True,
you know that story.
You're right. Yeah.
Where,
yeah,
if the other side of things, where it's like, hey, tell me the time you destroyed somebody in a hit, like, they could tell that story, but you don't remember. And I think that's probably why people get in that mindset. It's like this defense mechanism of it. But yeah, that was all our favorite stories over the years. I got a game for you, and then you got a game for me. I mean, it's a game for both of us. I built it for both of us. We played this before. I've stolen it directly off of, pardon the interruption. It's called Role Play, and each one of us gets a character, and you are going to answer.
I hate drama.
You're going to answer for this character about how you feel your year went. And you know, not all of this might be true. Where it's role play, we might be making some things up here. Who knows? But it's called role play.
We just picking one out of this? Because I can't do all three of these.
Let's go two. Oh, well, you can each pick one each for each of us. So you're going to go first. The first one I'm going to pick for you, Scotty, is you are role play. You're Bob Parsons. Bob is the owner of PXG. How was your year, Bob?
It was great, baby. Unbelievable. We started making expensive clubs. And then, you know what? We decided, hey, we're going to discount everything. And we're going to change everything about our brand. And we're going to start selling lower price clubs, because there's a whole bunch of people out there who need lower price clubs, baby. Unbelievable.
Okay. I don't know if that was Trump. I don't know if that was Parsons. I don't know if it was Gilbert Godfrey.
That's probably closer. Oh my God.
I didn't expect the voice. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, that's good.
But I think
I'm not clipping that and using it on social.
That's why I gave you Bob, is that PXG had this weird year where they were like the high end. They were the Mercedes-Benz. They were the Rolls-Royce, where it's like, you had to have a money to pay for it. And now they're on the other side of things where it's like that direct to consumer, anyone can pay for it. So yeah. I was curious to get your take and, or sorry, your take, Bob, on that. And I'm glad you had a great year. I'm glad the numbers look great for you. You're happy overall.
Well, you know, the brand is growing. So we've got a gateway drug now to get people in there.
That's good. Gilbert Parsons, everybody.
Gilbert Parsons.
All right, Scotty, who you got for me for role play?
Let's go Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour. Now, obviously, who knows what his voice is like. I don't expect that. But how was your year, Jay?
You know, here's the thing, Scott. Everyone wants to take down the PGA Tour. COVID wanted to take down the PGA Tour. And I think Greg Norman created COVID-19 to take us down. And now he's trying to create another competitive golf league. And Greg should know better that you can't beat the PGA Tour. We've showed him this before when he's tried this and he's trying it again. You know, we showed our talent. Tiger went down for the year with that horrific leg injury. And without Tiger, the PGA Tour isn't what it is today. But we showed the great talent we have out there that can carry this tour just like Tiger did. And we can spread it out a little bit. I don't care what other people say. We don't need to mix the men's and ladies game. The men's game is perfect. And I think I'm doing a great job as commissioner. No one will take me down. I'm Jay Monahan, and I approve this message. I don't know where to really go with Jay. I mean, that's kind of my thoughts, though, is like, what would Jay really be upset about other than like, I feel like Jay's in this corner right now and he's just like clawing and like he'll do anything to
clawing with his $1.5 billion of revenue.
Yeah, like the revenue's up, everything's up, but he's just still pissed. Yeah. You know, I mean, he's just mad. And I feel I don't know why.
Because somebody wants to take away his toy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But that's my thought. Okay, one more for you. Let's go different route. Role play. You're Joe LaCava. Joe, I believe, caddied in maybe one tournament all year. He had the year off basically with Tiger going down for injury. So how was your year, Joe?
Really quiet. I watched a lot of golf. And, well, you know, I decided not to watch a lot of golf and watched a lot of football and stood back and like
counted. Your Giants suck though, Joe.
Counted my money. That's what do I care? I've made so much money and now Tiger's gonna come back and he's gonna want me to go back to work, and I'm not sure I'm really into that, but hey, you know what, yeah, I could use a few extra checks, why not?
Yeah, okay, that's easy. And Joe had a great year, right? Watch a lot of football. I mean, his team sucks, as we said, he's a Giants fan. I think he's a Rangers fan too, a big Rangers fan, if I'm not mistaken. And they're okay, but like they're not at the top. So, now he's
everything.
Now he's heading back to work. He worked a little bit for Freddie this year, a little reunited there. Back to work. And here's the best thing about my understanding of working for Tiger. Get a salary every year. It doesn't change regardless how much you win or how much you lose. There's a nice salary. Sometimes there's a bonus. I think Joe just had a nice, relaxing year. And he's at that age where that's probably what he's hoping for.
100%. 100%.
All right, give me one more and let's wrap it up.
I got to give you it. Patrick Reed.
Oh, my year was great. What are you talking about? Good press all year long. I won the Farmers and I won it perfect. Nobody can take that away from me. I didn't do anything wrong. People tried to bring me down with the fake news media, tried to bring me down, and I proved them, you know, I'm great. My wife is awesome. She's not controlling at all. I know people will try to say that, and that she's running these fake Twitter accounts. I don't know who runs those. I don't know. I've never heard of those. It's not me. I know there was that tweet that came out where it looked like it came from my account and that account at the same time. Pure coincidence. I don't know what happened there. Ryder Cup should have been on that team. We would have won even more. We wouldn't have lost a point if I was on that team. So I think it was a great year. It was a great year. My kids are good. I've been talking a lot to my college teammates. We're thinking about doing a reunion soon where we get together. Both teams, Augusta and Georgia. You know, they both love me there. So, life was good for the Reed family this year. Nothing bad. I don't even know why you bring me on this podcast because clearly everything was fine. Like, you know, top five player in the world. And I'll always be that way.
Thanks, Patrick. You're incredible.
You're welcome.
You're really welcome. Wow. All right.
Yeah, that was role play. I think we need to do that every single week because Scott hates it. And that's why
I've got to work on my drama skills, apparently. I'm going to have to ask my daughter who's in drama class right now.
Oh, there you go.
I need some help.
Let's bring her on every week. All right. You have a game for me. Explain.
I do. All right. So I thought about this year. And one thing that obviously I look at every week is transcripts. You know, obviously there's press conferences every week, trying to look through and see some different quotes and things like that. The players get interviewed, brought into the media room, LPGA, PGA Tour, for an example. So what I thought I'd do is I'd pick 10 quotes out and see if you could guess who they were or who said them. I'm not expecting you to get them right. There are some hints in them that maybe will tell you, you know, who it is. I couldn't go too crazy with the quotes because obviously it would have taken me 10 years to do the research, but I've got some interesting ones here. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Number one, golf wasn't the main thing on my mind. Usually being four back going into Sunday, I'm thinking about one thing and one thing only, and that's trying to win the golf tournament. But obviously had a lot of other things on my mind last night. I mean, I apologized yesterday. I don't need to explain myself. I clearly screwed up. I made a terrible, terrible judgment call.
So this could go either way. This could go about the golf or this could go about something. I mean, you're not going to apologize for a bad shot. So I'm going to guess this is Justin Thomas after the whole situation where he dropped the homophobic slur. One for one. Very nice.
Good call there.
Just quickly too. I haven't listened to the tournament, but the podcast, but his whole, why is this happening to me after dropping a homophobic slur, explained a lot of what I needed to know about things there. I'm not going to assume anything, but you know, why, when you drop a, why is this happening to me after you screwed up? That says a lot about your character to me. I'm going to leave it there. Let's go to number two.
Sounds good. Number two, they take your blood, they spin it and they inject it back into the patellar tendon. And there's scar tissue, which is good. And there's really barely any tear now. So it's a good thing.
Brooks Koepka,
2 for 2, American
nice
Express.
With his knee, right? With his knee. Okay. Yeah.
So there's some little hints here. So you know, I didn't want to make it so vague that you couldn't maybe get it, but you know, anyway.
That wasn't so, like, my first thought was saying Tiger, but there wasn't enough detail for Tiger. Tiger would have explained the scalpel they used to cut his knee open.
Okay. All right. On to number three. This one might be a little harder.
All right.
I do feel like I'm underrated, but that's okay with me. I just think it puts a little chip on my shoulder, which is totally fine. I think a lot of guys that they give credit to deserve credit, but I've been pretty consistent. I've accomplished a lot for the short amount of time that I've been played out here on tour.
Matt Wolf?
Tell you what, I'll give you a hint. It was during the Pebble Beach AT&T Pro-Am.
Well, that wasn't a pro-am this year.
Well, non-pro-am,
which is why I loved it and I wish they would go back to it forever. I'd be cheating if I looked up the results, right? So I'm thinking short amount of time. I got to go with,
I mean, Matt Wolf's a good guess.
Like,
I mean,
Matt Wolf.
There's a lot of players that could probably say that and it could apply to for sure.
Yeah, I gotta go. There's my guess. It's just Matt Wolf now. I know it's wrong because you gave me a hint, but I feel like it's unfair to guess a second one like Xander or someone like that.
Yeah, it's Daniel Berger after he won.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, again, that's a All right, on to the next one. Number four. Honestly, I was pretty uneasy all day. I was not hitting it good. I was not hitting enough greens. I was not hitting it great off the tee. I just kept it together. I really grinded today, and my caddy was definitely a big part of why I'm here right now, holding the trophy up. Without the trophy, he kept me calm and is someone I can vent to. He even said, if you need to snap on someone, snap on me. So sometimes it's really good to get it out. He's such a great team player. I owe a lot of success to him.
Did you edit this quote at all? Did you take out any names?
No, I did not, actually. That was one thing I tried to look for with quotes where they don't actually mention a particular name.
See, this is tough. See, I'm just going to guess. I know it's wrong because they didn't mention the name, but my first thought is Joel Damon here, but he would have mentioned Gino by name in it. So the and same with Max Homa. That's another one where like, this seems like something they would say, but he would also mention Joe's name in there. Yeah. So my last guess, I got to go Tony Finau.
It is actually Nelly Korda at the Gainbridge LBGA.
Damn, Nelly. Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to look at the quotes, especially when you take them out of context and you can apply them, as I said, to a lot of other players and stuff.
So. Yeah, all right, that's good. Yeah, that's
all
good.
Right. Okay. This one should be fairly easy. It's a short one. Number five, XL, and it barely fits.
My boy, Harry Higgs.
No, it was Bryson at the Bay Hill.
Oh,
they asked him about the cardigan
that way. Yeah. Oh, see, I'm looking at it as a guy that's like being humble,
right?
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Yeah,
I thought it was a good poll, though. All right, number six. You know, obviously, well, coming into this year, I didn't really set any goals just because I knew how tough it was last year, and I just wanted to come out to learn to be a better player. My dad kind of told me, like, if anything, you should keep your goal as having under 100 Rolex rankings and top 60 for CME. That's just been kind of my goal at the back of my mind. I really want to win. I told Grant, my coach, about it, but I didn't expect to win here.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, first hint, you know, when you
yeah, it's on the ladies tour, right?
Like, yeah, the yeah. like. So it might be someone a little bit younger.
Danielle Kang?
Patty?
Tala. Oh, Tana my Kang. Girl. Okay, that's a good one.
At the end.
I didn't know. So at first, up until the last line, I thought it was Brooke. Mm. And then that last line, when it said, I told Grant, I know Brooke's dad's her coach.
Yeah.
So Grant, whoever Grant is, wouldn't be in there. So I, I'm not going to know. You probably would have got that. I feel like if I gave you that,
just I don't know if I would have. I mean, I would have probably narrowed it down like you did to, you know, somebody younger on the LPGA tour, but hard to pin that one down 100% for sure.
All right.
Okay. Number seven. You know, I can't say I'm the greatest. However, I'm the first to win a major. And if that's the bar, then I've set it.
Oh, first to win a major. Okay.
So at least that narrows the field a little bit.
Yeah.
But the first among who?
Well, that's where my head is at. So I don't have the answer, but my guess, because it doesn't seem like they would have said this just from maybe a language barrier standpoint, but they won a major. But are they the first winner from Japan? Was Hideki the first major winner from Japan? My guess is Hideki. There's where I'm going.
First men's major winner, Hideki Matsuyama.
This was Hideki?
Yeah, it was Hideki.
Wow, okay. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, his English is pretty good. I mean, if you go and look through, I found some other transcripts of some other players where, you know, the language barrier was definitely there, but Hideki was pretty straightforward, and that wasn't
it's the through an saying like if that's the bar, more slang to like the English language, right? It's not something you know, so I mean, I think he speaks probably much better English than people probably know, but
probably
like,
better than us.
That's where it threw me off. So, I mean, yeah, he should have this podcast. Hideki, okay, that's all right. Good. All right, how many more we got here? Three more.
Three more here. We got 10 total. So, number eight, my desire to play is the same. I've never been driven by exterior things. I've always been intrinsically motivated because I love to compete. I love playing the game. I love having opportunities to play against the best at the highest level. That's what drives me. And I think that's what it is. The belief that I could still do it inspired me to work harder. I just didn't see why it couldn't be done. It just took a bit more effort.
Was that Christina Kim? That's my guess, Christina Kim.
It's male.
It's the only other. Okay.
I love this game. It's hard to get, but it's fun to guess.
But like, so my thought was like, because she competed right into the end. So you're giving me an extra guess.
Ooh, that, you know, and that could apply to, to really to her. That could be easily as far as her at the end of the year and what she did to maintain her card, which was fabulous.
I'm not saying it's Phil because Phil has always been driven by exterior things.
According to him?
I'm going to go with Stuart Sink.
It's Phil.
What?
But you got to remember, it's him saying that, right?
So okay, it's him, Phil. Wow.
It's him saying he's never been driven.
This is shocking because like he's always worked hard, right? Like, and like, he's all like,
I never thought of it, and I thought it was an interesting statement that he said it that way. But again, you never know what a player is going to say in a particular moment when they get asked, right? It's not like they have a lot of time to think about it during a press conference, for sure.
I shouldn't have brought self-awareness into it.
Love that. Yeah. All right, number nine. This was definitely for Sebi. I know he tried a lot and usually...
John Rahm.
Don, you got it.
I don't know what he said.
Do you want to put the rest of the quote?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
This is definitely for Sebi. I know he tried a lot, and usually we think a lot about him at the Masters, but I know he wanted to win this one most of all. I just don't know how to explain it.
John Rahm, baby.
John Rahm at the U.S. Open. I almost forgot he won the U.S. Open. How bad is that?
Yeah.
There's so many, so many men's majors in such a, you know, a period of time that just a big blur that I almost forgot he won it.
Yeah. And if we bring in last year, right? What do we have?
Right, exactly.
The Masters late. Everything was late. Like we had eight majors in the span of what, 10
a
months?
A week and a half or something.
They just played it back one day tournaments. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Last one here. I think it's really fun. It's exactly why I play golf. I play golf so I can be in those moments against the best players in the world. It's why I practice so hard. It's why I'm in love with the game, because it's that great vehicle for competition. It maybe makes it a little sweeter knowing that the guys I played against are the best players in the world.
Wow. Played against.
We've said his name during this podcast.
Said a lot of names during this podcast. I know.
I've narrowed it down to the top 150 for you there.
Yeah. Give me Stu Sink again. Give me Stuart Sink again. He's at that tail end. That's my guess.
Tour championship.
That was at the Tour Championship. You know who I haven't said that once? DJ. I know it's not DJ.
No. That's a lot of sentence for DJ.
Yeah, I got nothing. I just give it to me.
Patrick Cantlay.
Patrick, it is a very vanilla quote now that I see it.
That's why I figured you'd get that one. So, yeah. You know what? That was fun. I like that.
I like that as well.
Not easy to pull those out. Especially to find ones that are interesting. I went through a lot of transcripts where I went through it, read the whole thing and went, nothing to see here. Move along.
Sadly, and my game was, how can I make Scott hate himself for 10 minutes? Yeah, exactly. Let's do role play. He always hates that one.
Kudos to you.
Well, Scott, let's finish up the episode with looking at 2022. So what we're going to do is we're going to give three predictions or statements of what we expect. So we'll go back and forth. We'll each give one, give a quick take on it. We'll wrap up our final episode for the year for our nice holiday break. We come back swinging in Hawaii. We're not actually being in Hawaii, but we'll be talking about Hawaii.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your first statement or prediction for next year?
My first prediction is not really related to the tours. My first prediction is related to golf courses more than anything. Obviously we're coming out of a period now in 2 years where we've seen a lot of boom at a lot of golf courses. We're seeing a lot of, you know, new players come to the golf courses. But we're also going to see that sort of change up a little bit. We're going to see people return back to some sense of normalcy as far as different their normal activities. And they may go away a little bit from golf. But in the meantime, I'm seeing more golf courses thinking about their properties as being an entertainment hub and not being just about golf. So my prediction is that in 2022, we're going to see a lot more golf courses embrace entertainment and realize that they are competing for recreational and entertainment dollars, not necessarily golf dollars. So I think you're going to see enhancements in clubhouses, more social activities. Golf course is thinking about, you know what, we have a lot of space. Let's put in a bocce court or a, you know, a volleyball courts or, you know, outdoor barbecue pits or, you know, other things where they'll become the center in their community. And I think golf courses are trying to think about themselves a little bit differently now, which I think is a great thing. And I think that overall, that's going to be good for golf.
I love it. We've talked about that on here a bunch, right? Is like small things, right? Like grabbing a slice of pizza at the turn versus like thinking differently, right? Yeah. It's a small detail. And be like, it's just a slice of pizza, but like name five golf courses where you can do that. Where you can walk, like it doesn't happen because people like just are so traditional and everything.
We're selling egg salad sandwiches and
or hot dogs. Yeah, or a hot dog salad sandwich where we combine the two. It's a special one. It's just the old hot dogs from yesterday that were on that little spinny machine.
The roller.
Now the roller. Yeah, I hope so. I love that prediction and it's one that I hope comes true. I'm not as bold on that prediction as you are. I just, you know, I'm going on history here of golf courses not being willing to try new things. I really hope you're right here. And I hope more people become like Copetown Woods and less like
where
not Copetown. Not Copetown Woods.
Good point.
All right. My first and prediction is that Brooke Henderson will win her second major this next year. I think this next year is a huge year for her. I'm not getting into details of why I think that. I just think it's going to be a huge year. I think she's gonna feel more comfortable. I think the world, every time I think the world's coming back to normal where we can reduce some anxieties about it things,
turns into chaos.
We're not allowed to record in front of each other because of, you know, I was 10 feet away from somebody, whatever, whatever. But that's what prediction is that Brooke wins. The Canadian Open comes back. That's going to be huge as well. And that I feel like she's going to be there. There's going to be a major championship. There's going to be big stories. It's going to be another year for Brooke, where this year was probably a quieter year for Brooke from a Canadian media standpoint. I think she's coming back to us remembering who's the face of Canadian golf from a past, future, and present standpoint.
Yeah, and I think that will totally be enhanced as well by the fact that the CP Women's Open will be in Ottawa, where she's you know, an honorary member. Her and her sister are honorary members of the Ottawa Hunt Club. So definitely she will be the face of it. She's got some responsibility there being, you know, not far from her hometown of Smith Falls. She's definitely going to be the face of that event. And as a result of it, you're right. You know, she'll probably grind a little bit more this year and want to do a little bit better. And she's probably going to have a little bit more motivation. Not that she's not motivated as it is. But yeah, I could clearly see that as well.
Yeah, and that's exciting. That's going to be in Ottawa. There's going to be the Canadian Open in Toronto as well for the men's side of things. Hoping to make a return. I want to carry a bag at both of them this year.
That would be
fun. Think you too. I know you have plans to do that. The Canadian Open for the men's side, but it'd be cool if we could do both together, room together, live the caddy life together for a couple weeks. Like really try to embrace it. Like let's go cheap on where we stay.
Oh God,
let's really grind it out and see what it's like. I think that would be awesome.
That could be some funny content.
Yeah,
sure,
let's
but yeah, you know what? That would be fun actually to have the opportunity to caddy in both of those, and I will certainly try to make that happen for sure.
What's your second?
My second is, you know, I'm a little hesitant about saying it because I'm a person that, you know, I don't want to put undue pressure on a certain someone, but, you know, in regards to Tiger Woods, obviously it's great to see him back and playing with Charlie, in the father and son. But my prediction is the fact that, you know, he'll get himself ready and play in the Masters. While it might be very difficult from a walking perspective, we're still many months away.
Yeah, 6 months away.
Yeah, so I think there's some time there or enough that even if he's not highly competitive, which I still can't see him not wanting to be. Obviously, he wants to be. He's not going to want to go there just as a, you know, a ceremonial figure. But I could see Tiger being there at Augusta. I think it's an important place for him. While I don't you know, I'm not going to predict obviously a win. I think 2019 was kind of a, you know, it was a big deal and could have been the last hurrah. But who knows? It could be.
It was the swan song. I think we need to start accepting that in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Can we count him out?
No, no, we can't. And do we want to? No, I mean,
do you think he's not pissed that Phil is now the oldest winner? Like, he's,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Tigers, he's a different breed, so he is.
And I mean, it's marvelous enough that you know, he's back and swinging a golf club and competing as it is, but I think there's just such an extra layer of buzz that would be added to that tournament just by him being there more than anything. And you know, he was missed you know, this past year, and he's always missed there. And you know, for as long as he compete, it would be great to see him competing there, and it just adds something else to the event, whether he's the winner or competing or not.
Yeah, I agree. Just talking about it brought a little bit of chills, I'm not gonna lie, thinking about the Masters again. And
oh yeah.
And it, I know we were just talking about our fatigue of golf tournaments and watching golf, but now like the turn's coming where I'll be getting back into it. I love watching the Hawaii stretch. I love watching.
Can't wait for that Century Tournament of Champions. I mean,
Maybe not that
barn burner.
Apparently, that's the worst golf course to walk around. Like, as a caddy, they're in Hawaii, so they don't rate it
the worst. Yeah, true, 100%. They're guaranteed a check and whatever. Yeah. But yeah, they have to be part goat to get around that golf
course. I know Kyle said like the two courses that are the hardest and you don't even notice by the end of it because of it. It's like Hawaii is like you're just having a great time. It's Hawaii, whatever. You get a nice cocktail at the end of it, and it doesn't really matter because you know your check is. Your check's going to be good by the end of the week regardless. And then the Masters, like, it's horrible walk, but by the end of it, I walked Augusta National, so it doesn't matter. On your front, my second prediction is that we're going to move on from Tiger breaking records this year and everything to just appreciating to watch him golf again. And
when you say we, is that us or the general world?
The majority the voices that are out there. I say this because, like I'm saying, it almost left us, right?
Yeah.
But it's almost left us, what, five times? Where we're like, hey, we might not see this guy play again. True. And then very quickly, we're like, he's back! He's winning them all!
He's right? getting and 7 million views on Twitter for a one swing.
Yeah, like all that stuff. So I don't know, but like that's where my thought is that like we're just going to move on. We're going to accept it for a while. I'm just going for this year.
Yeah.
That in 2022, we're just going to appreciate watching Tiger Woods say seven times or however many times we're going to see him this year.
I mean, I think we said that before he won, you know, at the Zozo and then won Augusta or whatever. I mean, but I think you're right. That mindset should be there is that, you know, we did get that bonus Tiger. We got that extra inning that we didn't think we were going to get. And to think, you know, we're going to get another one. If there's somebody to do it, yeah, it's him. But realistically, I mean, even people saying, oh, I'm disappointed that my kid's not going to see, you know, Tiger play the way he did when I was his age, as far as, you know, but yeah, that never, what sport does that happen in?
No.
So you're right. I mean, at this point,
I guess see Jack at that, like, right. It's everybody has that where your kids aren't going to see those things. Right. Right? Like,
yeah. And then Jack surprised us too in 86 and, you know, at 46 years old, but you know, can Tiger do it?
Yeah. There's some kid right now that's 5 years old that my kid is going to be thinking, oh, I wish my kid got to see this guy play in his prime. True. So like every generation goes through it. I got the tail end of MJ at like 9 years old or whatever, where like, you got to watch the whole thing. It's, you know, you can't have it all. Right. If that was the case, we'd have time machines. All right. Last one. What is our final prediction or statement for 2022 of what we think is going to happen?
I think, you know, we got the 150th Open Championship. It's going to be a special one. I know more than a few people that are going. I know a few people that are probably not going to be paying $4,000 a night in St. Andrews, which is pretty much all you can find left. But I think for some reason, you know, the script is going to be there for an event. You know, it's not going to be a Zach Johnson. You know, I'll say that right now, although it could turn out to be, but I think it's going to be a very special Open. There's going to be a lot of build up to it. There's going to be a lot of interest in it. I think players are going to want to play well, not only because it is the Open, but because it's 150th. I mean, just think about that. I mean, 150 of them. That's crazy to think of a tournament kind of being that age, a championship, and always being there on the old course is super special. So I think for some reason, it's going to be one of the all-time spectacles in golf.
That's where mine went. And I'm actually going to go with a statement that I think watching the opening tee shot at St. Andrews, and I'm actually going to go even bold
now
on
I
this
have
prediction.
Chills.
I'm going to go real bold on this prediction that watching the opening tee shot from Tiger Woods at the 150th Open Championship will bring tears to my eyes. I'm easily the most excited for this tournament. I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Thinking of how I can pitch to you us going, I know it would be chaotic, but it's like, maybe it's worth it. Maybe it's worth it to be like, I'd rather sit on that train for 3 hours a day to go stay in Edinburgh and go for say 2 days or whatever, maybe play a couple rounds of golf, do whatever we have to do because we can, then sit here in 10 years from now and be like, yeah, maybe that train would have been worth it, right? So yeah, I think that's where my head's at. Is like, I think can we make this happen?
Yeah, and I think we both have a little bit of bias, having been there before. It just makes a big difference as far as how you think about the place and its importance in the world of golf. And, you know, again, that's really what makes it special. And there'll be so many players in that field as well that feel the same way. You know, it's not only a goal to play in the Open Championship, but an Open at St. Andrews is big, and the RNA is going to make a lot of it. And I think the other side of it too, is that the RNA has been doing a lot of work in doing things that will enhance the game at a different level, at a, you know, all abilities type thing, in youth. There's so many different things that they're trying to do and so many initiatives. And I think a lot of that will be exposed even more because there is going to be so many eyeballs on this tournament. And because of that, it's going to be a very important one in the world of golf, not just professional golf.
100%. Well, that was it for the year. Now you got me looking at, hey, where the hell can we stay over there so we can go?
It's definitely got to be Edinburgh. I've looked.
I want to get this conversation going. If we start looking, maybe we can make something work. Let's get our media passes. I'll write an article a week if I have to.
An article
now until
a week.
Then. From now until then.
Okay.
If I have to get there, but I think it's one of those ones where it's like, I think. It's realistically, let's say this, like, how many more chances are we going to get to watch Tiger Woods play at St. Andrews? Ooh. Maybe one. Like, I just don't know if Tiger's with his body.
Yeah.
Does he get the final walk?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Jack got the final walk.
Right.
Arnie got the final walk. Garrett, like, all those guys got the final walk because it was a different time where, you know, they weren't doing what Tiger did.
Yeah.
Could this be the final walk without us even knowing it? Right.
I would rather risk it than
he's going to do it at 55 or whatever.
Right.
And like, I just don't see Tiger having the ability to go out and shoot 89 at St. Andrews. Like not the ability physically, like the mental
the
willingness to put himself in that such a vulnerable state to say, hey, St. Andrews means more to me than me shooting 89 here.
Right.
You know, I just don't see it. That's the hard part with me. It's like, will we get that final?
The good part is that it's flat and walkable. Although it has, you know, lots of undulations. It's a place you can play for a long time.
Didn't they give Daly a cart for an Open Championship at one point?
Did they prove it?
I think he's one where they'll cart him around. They cart him to the 18th hole and let him.
They might
play
carry
back.
Him around. They might give him a butler or a manservant.
Like he'd be like a
Bobby Jones in 1930 on the shoulders, right? They'd be carrying him around the old course for sure. So
he'd get hurt doing that. They'd run into a wall or something. They run into a fire hydrant. That was unnecessary.
Yeah, definitely.
That was just so unnecessary.
Is that how you're gonna wrap the year? Come on.
That's what else am I here for? Right. Like, we had those people listening to us on the beach 30 episodes in a row. She's probably waiting for me to say something. We're like, that wasn't needed. Here we are. But let's leave it there. Scotty, thank you for all your hard work this year.
You as well.
I'm proud of the work. I'm proud of what you've done on and off this podcast. We got to get back together in person. Hopefully everything's clear with COVID. We get back hitting some balls together. Yeah. And let's start talking about this Open Championship. People want us to go. They want us to go.
Yeah. So you know what? My big wish as we move forward, you know, that we're able to return to do some live stuff. I know we've both sort of worked on a list. We've got a lot of guests that we can get into. And, you know, I sort of laugh because I can remember talking to somebody probably 2 years ago and they're like, oh, you guys are going to run out of people to talk to. And I'm like, you're never going to run out of people to talk to in the world.
Oh, just bring Kyle Peters on every week.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it takes, it'll get the show done. And, you know, but it's been great. I really appreciate your hard work on it as well. It's been fun to do. And I'm looking forward to 2022.
Thank you to all the 100,340 downloads of this podcast. Here's to another 10. I just want 10 more and I'll be
85 countries in downloads.
85 countries.
That's 85 awesome. Countries. So that's pretty
all right. On behalf of Scott McLeod and all of flex.com, I'm Stefan Tudorf. We'll chat with you in 2022. Hope you have a wonderful holiday, a great New Year's, and we'll chat with you then.